We simply must applaud them. The Chat Podcast with Claire Borden, Keir Carr and Chad Wong. Hello to you, dear listener. I make no apology for getting political. As a permanent resident green card holder of the United States of America, a country where I have lived happily for 19 years, I was sick to my stomach in 2016 when he who must not be named became president and the country turned red with Republicans taking control of the House and the Senate. Oh, and the Supreme Court. Here's a fun fact. Study after study has shown that the most effective way to get people to vote is by having conversations with them in the 4 days before Election Day. That's Saturday, November 3rd. Here are two women I know and trust who tell us what we can do to turn America blue. First, artist Melanie Rothschild, not a political animal by any stretch, but a concerned citizen who shares with us what she's doing to effect change and why. First of all, I have to ask you if you are a Rothschild, as in ever so rich Rothschilds.
Not that I know of.
Oh, unlucky.
I have an aunt who said that when my grandfather came to this country from Russia at Ellis Island, that he made up this name, that he gave this name, that really the family name was Polyachek.
Mm, Rothschild's much better.
But then I sort of thought, that made me feel really happy because I thought, he was a genius. That's really nice. I have, you know, genius genes in me. And then I thought, but why didn't everybody do that?
Yeah, well, they did change their names, but nothing so glamorous.
Yeah.
So you're a child of immigrants.
I'm a grandchild of immigrants.
Or a grandchild of immigrants.
Yes, absolutely. I'm second generation.
So does that mean you're a Republican? Because they love immigrants.
I'm a Democrat. I'm also a third generation Democrat. Right.
And I mean, let's to be clear, I know you. You are my friend. And you are not what I would call a political activist. But you have this time, you have gotten on board for the midterms.
Yes.
And what are you doing?
I mean, I've always paid a lot of attention to politics cared about it. But this time, I think it's really maybe terror that has motivated me into action, because I feel like, just to be succinct about it, I feel like we have a traitor in the White House. Mm. And I don't feel that we've ever been in this
stupid
territory.
As well.
Well, you know, people say stupid, but I don't know. I think he's kind of some kind of a genius that we haven't encountered before, because nobody who comes in his wake seems to quite know how to grapple with him. So it might not be, you know, smart in the traditional ways that we think about it, but there is some kind of genius
there.
He's
winning. He's got the top job. So what are you doing?
So I was really devastated for a long time because, well, I mean, I still am, but on top of it, I had no idea what I could do. And I heard about an organization called Swing Left, which I was very excited about because I thought they were very pragmatic. And often I don't feel like Democrats are pragmatic in the way that I wish they would be. Swing Left came together shortly after the election in 2016 with the goal of flipping the House, turning the House blue. And they identified, I think it was 84 seats in Congress that they think have a potential for going from Republican to Democratic. And I thought that was a wonderful, clear, concise goal.
And what do they recommend doing?
Well, if you go to their website swingleft.org and you put in your zip code, they'll tell you the closest seat to your house that is considered flippable. Now, some people have to go drive an overnight drive to get to a district like that. Where we live, we are fortunate enough to have one that's like a 45-minute drive. So, and that is...
Which is, you live in Topanga.
Right. Yeah. We live in Topanga, and this is the 25th Congressional District in California, and it's about a 45-minute drive north. It's the Santa Clarita, Simi Valley, Valencia area. And there's a candidate running there named Katie Hill, who's just incredibly remarkable and well-suited to represent that district. She's 31 years old. She grew up in that district, went to public school there. She calls herself a purple Democrat because her mom is a Democrat and a nurse. Her dad is a Republican and a cop. So she, and that is a pretty traditionally Republican area for the last...
And she's up against Steve Knight.
She's up against Steve Knight, who's a Republican. I think he's had that seat for two terms. And that seat has been held by Republicans for 40 out of the last 50 years. However, that district went for Hillary Clinton by 6 points. So there are some shifts happening.
Where is she in the polls?
They are neck and neck.
Right. And what are you doing for her?
So I'm canvassing. Yeah. That's
a big deal. A lot of people aren't comfortable doing that. It's a bit like the old Jehovah's Witnesses knocking on doors, isn't it?
It's incredibly uncomfortable. Mm. It's completely out of my comfort zone. It's not something I ever thought I would do. But the truth is, waking up every morning with this administration is the most uncomfortable thing I can imagine. So I just do it. You just kind of get past it.
And what response do you get?
Well, everything. Anything and everything you can imagine. So first of all, I'll say, for the most part, the huge majority of people are polite. I've only had a couple of people who yell at me. And that wasn't as bad as I thought, to tell you the truth. But most people sort of respect that you're volunteer. When, as soon as they see you're not selling something, you don't want money, I think they kind of admire, like, wow, this is someone who cares about something. Okay, you know. So, you know,
it should be a pretty easy sell. Universal health care, gun control, sensible gun control. We're not trying to take your guns away. Female reproductive rights. Can we have some, please? Have I said universal health care? Surely we should get everyone with universal health care.
I agree completely. It seems so reasonable to me. But I have to say, in the last 2 years, I'm just astonished at how the world all around me, the things that I think are just so reasonable and so obvious, are not interpreted or seen that way.
What's this, thelastweekend.org? You were telling me about this. So tell us about The Last Weekend.
So The Last Weekend is another brilliant brainchild of Swing Left. And what they feel is that it's those last 3 days before the election when most people pay attention, really start figuring out what they're going to do. And Swing Left is trying to organize what they're calling, I think, the biggest grassroots army of volunteers ever for a midterm election. So they're really trying to galvanize as many volunteers as possible to go out and canvass and ensure that people who are so inclined will be following through and actually casting a vote.
So somebody like me who doesn't have a vote, but I am, this is my bit. What my bit is, I am, my application for citizenship, and my husband Collins as well, is in.
Fabulous.
So we're going to be able to vote in 2020, which I'm...
Fabulous.
That's my bit. But on the actual day when I can't vote for the midterms, I can contact Swing Left and offer to drive people who can't get to voting. There'll be things that I could do to volunteer. I don't want to go canvassing for people. Can I just tell you why? Brought up as a Jehovah's Witness. I've had my fair share of doors slammed in my face. Thank you very much.
Okay.
So I won't be doing that.
Might be interesting to see comparatively how the doors...
Yeah.
How many doors
I was
slam.
Only four. Anyway, that's moving on. That's another podcast.
So sounds we like an interesting one too. Yeah. I'm always interested in how all that works.
Not while my mum's still alive.
Okay.
So we've got thelastweekend.org, we've got swingleft.org, Katie Hill for Congress, but for swingleft.org, if you go to that website, people can find out who's in a flippable
state. And certainly you can, if people want to send in contributions, you can send it to Swing Left and they will distribute it right. as they see fit, or
I tell you what, I'm done making donations, albeit small ones, last for 2016 for the Democratic Party. I just feel they took my money and just what a waste. They just poured it down the drain, and they behaved appallingly. So I am punishing them by not giving them any money. So I'm doing what you're doing, and
it didn't feel,
cherry picking.
I had money that I felt I wanted to give. I felt like
I
wanted to.
Can I just say I'm
to...
talking about a small amount?
Right. I understand. But you know what? Whatever it is for each person yeah. is meaningful.
Yes.
And I wanted to give some money, but I had no idea where to give it, because I agree. I just didn't feel like the Democrats were doing anything with it that I felt was meaningful enough or impressive enough that right. I wanted it to go that way. With Swing Left, I feel differently.
Good.
I feel like they are smart. They do. So, for example, they create training videos for canvassers. They have real training. They have webinars. They really create tools and resources that can be shared with all of the different candidates that they're supporting. I just think they are pragmatic and smart, and I've been impressed with them. And grateful that an organization came along that I felt I could really pour a lot of
yes,
energy
that
into.
It wasn't wasted energy, and yeah. that you trusted and respected them.
Yeah.
So I mean, are you quietly confident?
No,
we're going to go blue. The
no,
house is going to go blue.
I'm terrified. I mean, I feel after the last election, I don't feel I can ever predict or feel confident about anything.
But you'll be able to wake up the next day and say, "I did my best.
I think
did
so.
Something."
I yeah. think so.
Well, yeah. can you explain to me all the articles I'm reading? They're talking about the Senate is going to be impossible to flip almost. Why is the Congress easier to flip than the Senate?
So the Congress is elected every 2 years.
Right.
Everybody gets,
yeah.
so there's a whole fresh crop. The Senate is a different senators.
Yeah, every
it's
4 years.
Year,
it's
6 years. 6 years. President is 4.
Yeah. No, I know that bit. Senators, counting those days.
But the Senate is 6. So it just has to do with the particular
I
seats
see.
That are up.
I understand.
And as it turns out, a lot of the seats that are up right now are Democrats who are in districts where Trump won by large margins. So they're Democrats that
Ooh,
are really
that is
kind
unlucky.
Of hanging on by the skin of their teeth.
I'm going to get in the fetal position now, if I may.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh, okay.
So it would be lovely, of course, but it's a lot to hope at
okay.
this point. Yeah.
But you have hope, and you have hope for humanity and Americans. And
well, oh. I have to. See, now I'm going to cry, Claire,
Aww.
Because, you know, I have to have hope for this
yeah,
country.
I know.
You know, I feel like, you know, you mentioned that my grandparents were immigrants. So I feel like my grandparents left a country where they couldn't openly live as Jews. You know, they were being persecuted. It was Tsarist Russia. And they, I mean, thank goodness, they managed to figure out a way to get out. And they were lucky enough that when they came to this country, they were let in. Because, you know, 20 years later, Jews who came to this country were not let in.
Oh, really?
A lot of those boats were turned back around and went back to Europe and fell into Nazi hands. So I had wonderful, amazing luck that my grandparents had the tenacity and the wherewithal to come this way, and the good luck that they were allowed to come in. So that was the huge thing that they did in their lifetimes. You know, and in those days when you came, that you never went back, you know. So that was huge. My parents' generation, my father and my father-in-law are both World War II vets, you know, and all that they, you know, went through. And I feel now for my generation, like this is our challenge to keep this country afloat.
I agree. It's very important. We must all get on board. Vote.
Yeah, because 2 more years of this administration, if they are unchecked for 2 more years, they will just be able to entirely run amok. And the courts, which have already been undermined to such a great degree, and I don't just mean the Supreme Court, but so many lower courts that they have been very busy filling with extremely conservative young judges, kind of quietly. That's sort of under the radar.
That's smart.
It's brilliant. See, I don't ever underestimate their intelligence. It's just their moral compass. Like, you know, most Americans I know, Republicans or Democrats, are generous and eager to embrace other people.
Yes, they
are not racists, and they are wonderful people. And I think, I feel like a lot of the ones who support Trump are, they've been duped.
Yes, definitely.
And I don't feel angry with them.
I didn't mean to be too disrespectful or harsh.
And I also I feel like liberals have made mistakes.
Totally. The 2016 was a perfect shitstorm, which we haven't got the time or the inclination. So many things went wrong. And my goodness, are we going to pay the price?
So I have been obsessed since the election with just trying to figure things out, because I feel like I don't understand the world. I feel it's as if gravity suddenly stopped being gravity and you'd walk outside and float up. That's how
we were bereft.
Oh, yeah. That's how confused I am about what happened. So I've been trying to talk with people, and I've had a few weddings to go to this past year. So I found myself on airplanes. Mm. And those are great people to talk to because you generally don't ever see them again. So I've had very long conversations with a few Trump voters. And I took away a very interesting observation, I think, which is a place where liberals, I think, really made a mistake. Well-intentioned, but a mistake nevertheless. And I think that was in over, I'm going to say, scolding Republicans for not understanding for not being knowledgeable about certain aspects of history. So let me explain to you what I mean. There's a term that I wholeheartedly believe in, which liberals use to talk about things that have been for too long not given enough context around them. So they use the term white privilege.
Yeah.
I very much believe in that term. So the term white privilege is, I think, an incredibly misunderstood term, because I think the concept behind it is 100% solid, that people who are white move about this country not so much with people handing them towelettes, moist towelettes, after every meal.
Although that would be welcome.
It would be lovely. But with a certain amount of comfort and carefreeness that people of color often, generally, just don't have.
But liberals get that. But do Republicans get that?
For a quick example, if you're the mother of a teenage son, as I am, when you worry a lot, you know, that something, that there's going to be some place that they're going to, you know, do something that is not going to be smart, okay? But add to that, if you're the mother of a black teenage son, it's a whole different world.
Of course.
It's just a completely different world. So that's just one example. But I think that, so I think that the term white privilege is a really valid term, and there's a lot of explanation and history that really should be something that's taught in high school, of all the things that go into that. The fact that, you know, black people weren't able to get mortgages or buy houses in certain areas.
But I don't know what you're saying. Are you saying that Republicans...
Well, the term white privilege, I think, is offensive to a lot of people who don't understand...
Republicans, you mean?
Yeah. And they feel it's... that they're being called racists, and they're really not. They feel they might be middle class, lower middle class, and feel like they're struggling, and they resent someone telling them that they have this life of privilege.
Right. You know, who in the Midwest and all in the rural areas who voted for Trump, a lot of them were on their medical insurance was provided by the Affordable Care Act. And they don't realize it, that that was Obamacare, and yet they deride it. That is just
you see signs
ridiculous.
You see signs in some of those rallies, some of those Trump rallies, that say, government, keep your hands off of my Medicare.
Yeah,
you know?
Fantastic.
And it's just...
But it's not funny.
Well, the other thing I learned in this whole election cycle, really learned, I always kind of knew it, but now I really know it, is that fact, policy, those things have very little to do with people's opinions in the end. I think there are very few people who pay close attention to that. And I think there's a certain kind of branding, if you will, that takes a hold of a lot of people. Oh. And it's
he who must
separate.
Not be named is awfully good at branding.
Genius. Mm. Genius.
Yeah. Well, we're not going to end on that note. That he's a genius.
No, I think I that's really good advice, Claire.
So we're going to get out there and we're going to vote. Come
vote.
On.
Take people with you.
Yes.
Volunteer, especially in that last weekend, even you know, if you're driving people, even if you don't feel like knocking on doors, to go to a place where people are and you can assist in some ways that are helping them, even if it's, you know, bringing water or...
Yeah, we'll find a way. Thank you so much, Melanie Rothschild, artist and activist of this parish. Thank you so much for chatting with me.
Well, thanks, Claire.
Keep calm and chat on.
Here's activist Alexis Aria, who runs the phone banks for Democrats in Topanga and Malibu. Lexi.
Hello.
Hello, darling. What can we do to turn America blue in the midterms and then 2020?
So we definitely have some momentum going. I would like the Democratic Party to be not in too much of a bubble or hype. To be realistic about how well we're gonna do. I think instead of predicting the future, just work hard to the bone until Tuesday night.
What sort of things can people do? What are you, let's start with you. What are you gonna be doing?
I'm gonna be doing phone banking, text banking, having a lot of conversation with voters, canvassing, getting involved.
Does it make a difference?
It does. From this point on, you will be in the business of acquiring votes and getting commitments from voters. So a lot of strategies that President Obama created and his team, it was used by the other party, but the Republican Party, because they were so effective. Voter outreach and things of that sort. So yes, we definitely have to do that. Always and always and always
and
for everything.
What are you hearing? What feedback are you getting?
So I don't care about people who predict the future. I believe in just working really hard until the election and then see the results.
But what lessons have you learned from the disaster of
2016? Well, I really hope my beautiful, wonderful friends who were being perfectionist and were going for a third party and they drank the Kool-Aid for that third party, I really hope that they understand that when you have a two-party, mostly two-party system, just don't buy the Kool-Aid about how nice it is. Or yes, I'm a nonconformist. I'm sure you are, a lot of us nonconformists. But it doesn't mean that you have to go, you know, to that.
What you're
third
saying
candidate.
Is that the people who voted for, say, Jill Stein, they cost Hillary.
I think they made a very big mistake. I think because they were so vehement in not wanting to support any other side, and they weren't considering the big picture of what we were against. We were against a lot of money. We were against the Midwest, the South. I mean, the parts of America that traditionally votes. I mean, not all of Midwest, but, you know, parts of America that traditionally votes red, or Montana, Idaho, the mountain states. And they were not looking at history. They had to just look 16 years prior to the 2000 election. How that was one, Al Gore was the first time out of college. I was working very hard for a campaign. And we were begging people not to vote for Nader. And they were buying the Kool-Aid, because Ralph Nader said exactly this word, exactly, I'm quoting him, that Al Gore is exactly like George W. Bush. Now, the history, right, history judges that statement and knows that's not true. But at the time, a lot of college professors in Florida bought that, you know, drank that Kool-Aid and bought that ideology. So I hope that Democrats will not be too perfectionists when it comes to candidate. They look at the big picture of who's running against that candidate, presidential, congressional level.
So for this, what you're looking for is to flip some Republican seats.
Yes, and even for keeping Democrats, for example, a lot of people, I mean, so I am a nonconformist, I'm an artist, I have pink hair. Yes, I understand when people want change and they want exciting new things, but what I'm saying, I hope people look at the eagle's eye view and
look at the algorithms. Big picture,
yeah.
To go back.
And don't say, hey, I like rock and roll. I like new things. I'm young at heart. Let's go with this guy who's
against,
like a fresh air.
We want gun control.
Yeah.
We're not saying take away the guns.
Progressive agenda is great.
Women's health rights. We want universal health care. Yes. We want free college education.
And it's wonderful that candidates will say this, but I just don't want a puppy in Senate right now. I don't want one. I want a wolf. I want a seasoned wolf. That's what I want, you know. So it's just my little tiny, you know, piece opinion and my little tiny two cents.
So you are going to be working ferociously like a wolf to get the Democratic candidate.
I'll never be like a wolf. Maybe like a chihuahua. But
So tell us your background, because you have a marvelous accent.
Thank you. So I'm Iranian-American. In 1939, from the pressures of the Hitler regime, Persia changed the name of the country to Iran. So the race, the culture, the language is called Persian. Some people say Farsi, which is the biggest annoyance for me. I don't like when people say Farsi. The name of the language is Persian. And so I'm Persian. And I grew up traveling a lot in Europe and other countries, and number one, I'm a citizen of the world, but...
But you are an American citizen.
I'm an American citizen, born on the 4th of July. Yeah, so I love a lot of ideology, and people don't know this. If they just do a very simple research, will know. The founding fathers of U.S., that's what makes it so exciting, because I study that era because I'm born on the 4th of July. So the founding fathers of U.S., they actually were reading Persian kings' account of how they governed. So they used a book called Cyropedia. So Cyrus the Great, founding father of kind of the 3,000 years modern Persian Empire, because the country is about 12,000 years old. But so his ideologies and the way he was governing.
Was that with a rod of iron? Was it like off with their heads, throw them in?
No,
the
it was actually he would conquer and then he would accept the cultures and allow the people to govern themselves. He freed the slaves, so it's all over the Bible and the Torah. So Persian kings had a very good reputation. And even the last Persian king, which another rude...
The Shah of Iran.
Oh, yeah. You know, in the 70s even, we had such good reputation, Iranians did. We were held in such high regard. We would have parties and all the kings and queens would want to come. And so, you know, now it's totally...
And have you been welcomed with open arms by America?
Well, a lot. But I've also had a lot of experiences with racist people who didn't like the fact that I'm really confident and happy-go-lucky. They wanted me to know my place. But my place is on the planet. I'm very confident. I'm very well-educated. And I will walk confidently into anything. And the number one place that I saw most amount of racism against me was churches. It was very surprising for me.
Because you're a Christian, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm Christian. So I grew up, my parents told me and my brother, we hate religion. And we have all kinds of religion in my family growing up, right? We had Jewish, we had Muslim, we have Baha'i. I mean, everything you could find, we had it in my family. So they told us, they said, we hate religion. But when you guys grow up and grow older and do your own research and choose whatever you want. And I just had an affinity. You know, I play the harp, I play the piano, I play English handbells, you know. I think it was just meant for me to be a church person. But the church was where I saw a lot of racism, let's just be honest. But it's okay because I've been punched. No, because what I mean okay is that I don't feel defeated. That's what I mean when I say it's okay. I don't feel defeated. I feel very victorious because, you know, I've been punched. I have a broken bone inside my body because somebody in church punched me. A lot of things happened.
Don't get me started on the hypocrisy of church and religion.
California being such a beautiful place of acceptance and understanding. And so in Los Angeles, where we have a sophisticated metropolis, when people come from bigoted or small-minded backgrounds, they still have all that baggage and mentality with them in LA. So you see in LA this thing of me walking happily and confidently and somebody having a problem with it. But it's a very good conversation to have. Just like we're having conversation about women's rights in America. I'm not talking about Iran. Forget, you know. Yeah. I mean, forget all the stuff that we've done for middle rights in for women's rights in Middle East. Now we're worried about women's rights in U.S.
There's so many aspects to it.
But California is a blessed place. But it is good to discuss this thing.
Some people don't like doing cold calling. How can they help? What jobs can people do?
If somebody's listening to your podcast and interested in getting involved, I'll just want to be cute for a minute. If you're a Republican, don't worry. Just stay home and, you know, eat dinner. If you're a Democrat, you can call me or email me anytime. I'll help out in any way I can. If you don't like calling or texting, and texting is easy, they use routing so that your phone is not shown. A local phone number will show. Whatever state it is for that voter. But let's say you don't want it. You don't want to deal with computers. You don't want to deal with phones. You don't want to do any actual voter-to-voter, because you're a voter yourself when you volunteer, voter-to-voter contact. That's fine. Just show up with a bag of chips and put it in on the counter. Say, hi, guys. Good luck. Thank you for what you're doing. And go home. 30 seconds of volunteering.
And what about driving people to the polls?
Fantastic on election day.
There's so much.
I mean, for volunteering anything, if you're a praying person, whatever, put positive thoughts and prayers out there.
Prayer isn't going to do it. Please. We all did enough of that. Well, certainly positive affirmations in my case. But it didn't work. We've got to take action. You really do have to take action.
But I mean, like, let's say somebody is just doing that, or somebody is immobile and at home. I mean, no, you can still, I mean, everyone can be involved. I hope that everyone becomes very empowered on a daily basis, and they know they can do something, because this is U.S. Most probably, you won't go to jail for being, you know, for opposing the government. And for having a voice.
Not yet. This time.
And in California, we're in such a beautiful place.
Let's keep it that way. Let's keep the world a better place. What about all the measures that come up? Do you take a stand on those?
It's very important, yeah. When it comes to measures, study and do what you want to do.
Yeah.
So I mean, you have recommendation. Yeah, you have recommendation from Democratic parties. No, just be your own person. And, you know, don't be fooled by cute ads with a little school teacher saying, hi, you know, study the measure. It could be. And use your gut instinct at some point when it comes.
Well, use your gut instinct if that gut is telling you to vote Democratic.
Definitely. I hope people vote Democratic, but I'm talking about measures.
Yeah, because it's vital
do
that
study
we curb
it.
His
yeah.
power.
Study,
but I think it's awfully good that I'm being impartial. So guess what I'm doing? What my bit is.
What is it? I'm excited to know.
And it was not an easy decision. Put in for citizenship.
Ooh.
So that I will be able...
But you'll be double. It's like France. Like, you'll be double.
Yeah. I don't lose anything, but I will be able to vote in 2020.
Oh, wow. That's exciting.
It is exciting. Exciting time. So are you confident?
No, not at all. These people, not to be in this hype and have a party about blue wave and we're going to win. And don't pop the champagne yet. This never is good for a election campaigning mentality. Because never relax and never think it's done. I actually came up with this phrase that says you don't want to wake up the morning election after election thinking you didn't do enough. It was used in campaigns. So that's the mentality. We should never say, oh, it's in the bag, let's just do it. I mean, I think some people thought that about Hillary Clinton campaign.
What? Because it was in the bag?
Well, I mean, if she never went to Michigan, I mean, come on. How could you not have a rally, right. One rally in Michigan?
Right.
So maybe someone said, oh, it's in the... I don't know. I have no idea.
Oh, the polls were saying she was going to win. Nate's...
I never... Oh, polls don't mean anything. That's the number one rule of campaign.
So God, I'm getting nervous again.
Well, don't get nervous. Just work hard.
Yeah, I'm doing this is my bit.
All over the place. I know. I'm so proud of you. You're such a little feisty British. And right now in the era of me being obsessed with Great British Bake Off or baking show, it's exciting to see a little British person
So like you and I are the same. We're citizens of the world. Yeah, we just got to keep fighting. Don't give up. Don't sit down.
I want everybody listening to this podcast to know that it's really important that you help.
Yes.
And let's say you have 10 children and you work 2 jobs and you have 5 minutes a day. Well, 5 minutes a day if you can volunteer or call. It's very important. Say, oh, I can make one call a day to a voter. That's fine. Go online, make that one call. Because
it's crucial to say that the last couple of weeks before an election, it's crucial. Yeah,
especially the last 4 days.
Oh, is it 4 days?
The GOTV, get out the vote. The last 2 weekends are also very important. So people are busy, I understand. And sometimes I work so hard that the energy level in my body just doesn't allow me to do what I want to do because I'm not 20-something anymore or 30-something anymore. if I tell you how old I am, I have to shoot you. So no, I'm just kidding.
But well, I hope you're not. I haven't got a gun lying around.
No,
of course not. You've got a Democrat.
Okay, thank you. Maybe.
Get out there. Let's get out there.
We simply must applaud them. The chat podcast with Claire Fordham. Keep calm and chat on.
I hope you found something to inspire you to vote and volunteer in these crucial midterms. Check out swingleft.org and thelastweekend.org or email alexis.aria@live.com. That's alexis.aria@live.com. If you want to make America blue again, my husband Colin and I are taking a big step to become American citizens so we can vote in 2020. #awkward if our applications aren't approved. On the next episode of The Chat with Claire Fordham, I'll be interviewing plastic pollution activist Diana Cohen. Until next time, keep calm and chat on.
We simply must applaud them. The Chat Podcast with Claire Fordham. Keep calm and chat on.
The Chat with Claire Fordham is an M Squared production.